and welcome to episode 278 of the Bad Wolf Podcast. I'm Martin, and joining me this week, I've Chris and Sam.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's a new year. It's a new episode of the podcast. How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, not too bad. Got a lot of alcohol left. I managed to make a whole bar, like, I don't know what size chocolate bar it is. I'm just going to say an American standard. It's like the size of, I'm going to exaggerate, Matt, it looks like it should be about 2 feet long. It's a ridiculous a big bar of chocolate I got for Christmas, and I managed to make that last 4 or 5 days.
Oh,
so
wow.
My weight loss ambitions might be scuppered a little bit, but it's otherwise, no, all good.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I need to work on that. That is my jet for the first time ever. Is my New Year's resolution is to lose weight, because it was around Christmas. Everyone does that 10-year challenge thing. You know, they were the
depressing
on social
way to
media
start the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. Like most people, but the thing is, most people, right, were going, oh, look how stupid I looked 10 years ago. Wasn't I a dork? Look at me now. Aren't I a model? And I was like, no, I look great 10 years ago. Now I look mental. Everyone else was like, oh, God, look at me now. What a glow up. And I was thinking, look at me. What a fuck up. Like, I really, like, so I really need to do some work on that, I think.
Yeah, same. So, guys, we're here to talk about Eve of the Daleks. So let's get the overnights out of the way, because it's all been kicking off on Twitter again about these overnights and how abysmal they are. And I just want to remind people that overnights mean absolutely nothing these days. It got an overnight of 3.21 million, which in old money does sound low, but it was still the sixth highest viewed program of New Year's Day. It's in the top 10.
Yeah,
and I saw people kicking off and going, oh, the tourists didn't get much in the way of advertising, and it beat it with an extra 1 million. Yeah, but a trailer for The Tourist aired in Britain before Spider-Man No Way Home.
It did, yeah.
So even if 10% of that audience tuned in, that equates to a larger audience than Doctor Who.
And also, it's also a good sort of, it felt like a Sunday anyway, even though it wasn't. It's a good time to watch anything on TV around that time, especially for adults.
Yeah, kids have gone to bed, yeah. And you're looking for something to watch. So guys, did you watch Doctor Who live?
No.
It's a rare one for me. I did, and it's the first one since the Capaldi era that I've been able to watch with my kids. Yeah, so we all watched it together. Okay, Sam, I'll come to you first. What did you make of this episode?
Well, I was one of these people who kind of saw stuff about it on Twitter before I watched it. And I just sort of thought it looked rubbish. Like, I was like, what? The whole timey, it felt very timey-wimey. Stephen Moffat, you know, people keep dying and then they come back to life. They die, they come back to life, you know, all that stuff. But actually, I really, really, really enjoyed this one. I think it was possibly my favourite of the 13th Doctor's era. I really enjoyed the Angels episode. That was my favourite up until this one. I just thought it was really good fun. I think, finally, Chibnall has found his niche, which is kind of the old school base under siege trope that used to be around in the classic series a lot. And I really like that. I liked the kind of the claustrophobia of it. I think the whole going back in time thing worked really well, the way it was losing a minute each time and they had to plan what they were going to do next. I thought it was a really clever concept. On paper, it sounded rubbish. I thought it was going to be along the lines of, you know, that a Stephen Moffat sketch for Comic Relief with Ryan Atkinson in,
yeah,
you know, they keep going back in time and bribing the architect. I thought it was gonna be that sort of thing, but no, it was a really nice, like, right, we need to trick them, and we need to, and the fact that the Daleks were anticipating what they were going to do and they had to get around that, I thought was really clever, because the Daleks weren't stupid in this. They were actually quite clever, and they had the new guns that they couldn't be blocked. They were quite ruthless. They were this just kind of determined to, just no matter what kind of space anomaly there is, they're going to get the job done. I like there was a reason for them to be there, you know. They knew that because the TARDIS was making this big buzz from its reset, they could channel in on it and get in there and do damage to the Doctor. So I like that. And I thought, again, Jodie was very good in this one. She was a bit more serious and a lot more bossy. She seemed quite angry in this, which I quite liked. It's the first, because one thing that used to happen a lot is that the Doctor always used to get into an argument with the humans in the story. You saw it all the way back to, like, the first Doctor with his companions in the South, with the second Doctor was always kind of being spoken down to. Third Doctor was clashing with the UNIT. And it was good to see a really strong character played by Aisling Bea, and then seeing her and the Doctor clash all the way through was really nice. I thought that was really good. And also her sort of being a little bit snappy with Yaz because of the time constraints they had. You felt there was a real threat, which is something that didn't really happen in Jodie's first two series. You never felt there was too much of a threat, but here it did. So her snapping at Yaz and then saying, look, I'm sorry, but we just haven't got time for this, I thought was really nice. And yeah, overall, I just really enjoyed it. I was kind of hooked from the start to the finish, really. Without a doubt, my favourite of this era.
Chris, what did you make of it?
I really, really enjoyed it. Because I remember us, we were all saying about the idea of having a continuous story over six parts would be exciting and so forth. It was very heavy, of course. And as we realised, it was a lot heavier than we thought it was going to be. When this one came out, because my partner Liz doesn't like Doctor Who at all. I think she watched them up until Amy and Rory left, and just didn't find any interest in it afterwards. She sort of sits there on her phone while we're watching. And I said to her, oh, it's a new Doctor Who tonight. And she sort of said, oh, God. All right, okay. Well, so we came home and I was like, well, we're going to watch it before we go to bed. Okay. And she said, it's not one of those continuing stories, is it? Because I could not keep up with the last one that you had gone on. And I thought, well, if you put your phone down, you might. But this one, being self-contained with one reference to Flux, so the Flux events haven't really been retconned. There's no reset button. What happened in Flux was a big bloody thing. I just liked the fact that it was contained to a warehouse. We went from this massive Star Wars-y sort of story and visuals, multiple monsters, to just Daleks and a warehouse. And it just worked perfect. The premise, like you said, Sam, was great. So the time loop thing. And it was sort of, you were sort of hooked off. How the hell are they going to get out of this one? Which is something we haven't had much of. And Liz, to her credit, actually said if every episode was like that, she'd continue watching because she really enjoyed that one. She put her phone down watch it. So I wasn't just moaning at my partner for no reason. I was leading up to this. No, we really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. I always struggle with the name. Is it Aisling? Aisling?
Aisling.
Aisling B. I've seen her in a few other things. I wasn't quite... I'm sort of mixed on her, really. I think she's a very good actress, and she was very, very good in this. But no, I just thought it was just a great, great hour of gripping television and a nice special, really. Nothing too complicated. You followed it, and when it got to its ending, you were like, yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought this was perfect to New Year's Day viewing. You're a bit hungover. Everyone's still kind of in that Christmas calendar where you don't know what day it is properly. Yeah. My kids liked it. They really enjoyed it. My partner really enjoyed it. And like you, Chris, my partner's someone who will sit on her phone when she's always double screening. So like she half watches stuff. We'll get moments where she'll go like, but where did that character get the gun from? They didn't set that up at all.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, he picked it up when he had that big conversation about his dad. She'll go, oh, well, yeah, I didn't see that. But yeah, she was gripped throughout this one as well. My kids loved it. My son said something what I thought was quite interesting. He wished it had been a Weeping Angels story with the Weeping Angels just coming in randomly around. And I thought that could have been interesting, but it reminded me a lot. And I know his name's not popular to say anymore, but it reminded me a lot of Noel Clarke's Stories 24. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's basically an alien invasion in a storage unit. And I always wondered if it was an idea that he pitched to RTD back in the day that got rejected. And if you watch it, you can see like the Doctor Who-ness of it. And I wonder if maybe his original outline is still knocking around the BBC production office. And they're like, yeah, let's make this. Because it felt very similar to that. Aisling B was incredible in this. And I know her as a comedian because I watch Mock the Week.
Yeah,
and
that's
stuff
all
like
I knew
that.
Her from, really.
Yeah, I didn't know she was also an actress. And obviously, I knew she was in The New Home Alone and this. I thought she was a comedian that became an actress. But in reality, she's an actress that became a comedian. And she's been working solidly in films and TV since 2009. And she only has 9 less acting credits than Jodie Whittaker. She was phenomenal in this. If they were to announce her as the 14th Doctor, I would be A-OK with it. So I laughed at one moment that no one else in my family got. And that's when the Dalek said, my name is not Nick or I'm not Nick, something along those lines. And I laughed, obviously, because the Dalek was being operated by Barnaby Edwards.
Yeah.
So he isn't Nick. And then you've got Nicholas Briggs voicing the Dalek. And I don't know if you guys remember it, in that first Jodie Whittaker New Year's Day special.
They put his credit as Nick Briggs, not Nicholas.
Yeah. And as he said on the podcast, like in conversation, he is Nick, but professionally, he is Nicholas. So then that's a callback to that. And I just thought that was brilliant. And I laughed and no one else in my family got it.
Someone tweeted about that already. So I saw that before we went in. So I was quite, comfortably aware that that was possibly, so I knew that joke was coming. Yeah, no, I just thought it was just very good. I mean, Daleks were quite terrifying. They weren't annoying, which you see something they could easily have been in a story like this. Then goes, oh, they've turned up again. Oh, Christ. You know, like just at the moment they're getting around the corner and it's like, oh, they're going to kill them. And each death even felt painful as well, which is something which was interesting, because it wasn't like done to comic effect as such in the deaths. Each death felt like, oh no, even though you knew they were going to come back, it was just harsh. Apart from, I suppose, Dan's heroic one when he distracted them, the rest of us, oh no, don't do that, because you could see the fear in like Aisling's face. It could have easily been an annoying episode, but I just loved it.
Yeah, it was really good. And it's actually similar to your two partners. My wife enjoyed it too. And she's, maybe it's a thing, the people who we're in relationships with, but my wife's the same. She very rarely watches something. Like, she's watching something now, like where something on Netflix that's quite popular. I can't remember what it's called. It's got Eddie Izzard in it. And some drama about an ex-stripper who someone died. I don't know, one of these things she likes. But she'll literally, I just see her leave the room and go to the kitchen and get something and come back. I'm like, why don't you pause it? She's like, oh no, it's all right. Or she'll be on her phone for half of it. It's like the other day we were having like a movie day and she was like, all right, your turn, what do you want to watch? And I said, all right, we're going to watch a masterpiece now, Psycho. She'd never seen Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock movie.
What?
And then, she started getting her phone out. And I always say, she hates me saying this, so I always say, oh, you'll like this, Lisa. It's one of those films you actually have to watch. Like, it's one of those films you actually have to watch and then you might get what's going on in it. So she did actually watch it. She did enjoy it. But you have to, every time I just see her look at her phone, I'm like, Alpha, just put it down. You know, and then she's like, oh, pause it a minute. I just need to go and call this person. I think we had to pause the film. It took about 8 hours, like 8 hours to get through this bloody 2 hour film. But it's always the way. But with this last night, I didn't give a shit if she was watching it or not. It started and she was like on her phone. She was quite content. And it was me watching it anyway. And then actually I noticed about 10, 15 minutes since, she put her phone down and was completely invested in it. And she likes all the people as well. People always get a bit narky about like star castings and stuff. And it was very strange for me seeing like Aisling B and John Bishop in the same room, having seen them for years on like Live at the Apollo together and stuff. But that sort of casting does help bring in kind of casual viewers, you know. My wife was intrigued to see, you know, John Bishop join. She was the same when Bradley Walsh joined. And she was the same with these characters as well. And she got really into it. She was like, oh, that was really good. That was really nice, that one. I mean, it's one of those things, again, where I know it was, and this is like such a stupid nitpicky thing, but I think I spoke to you guys that around Christmas, as I always do, like I do with many films and TV specials, I watched some of the Doctor Who Christmas specials, and I know it would be a bit hard with the whole like countdown thing, but I would have loved this to have been a Christmas special. And I know that's such a kind of an unpopular opinion, probably, because it does work with the whole fireworks thing and the whole, you know, the whole New Year's Eve countdown. But for me, I would have loved this to have been a Christmas Eve one. And it did feel Christmassy because you had the Christmas trees up in the lobby and stuff like that. And I would have quite liked them to have all gone out at the end and it'd be Christmas Eve and it all be quite nice. And yeah, I would have really enjoyed that. But that's just a very silly nitpicky thing of me. I just missed the Christmas specials, basically. But yeah, it was good to see, I think, a few people really. I didn't see much negativity about it, actually. A lot of people seemed to go, oh, that was really good. I did not expect people to like it because I felt that the last few Dalek stories have been a bit lame. And I didn't like this whole kind of just putting Daleks on New Year's Day. So it's not become a Doctor Who special anymore. It's essentially a Dalek special you get every New Year's. And they've been a little bit, you know, like the first one was, you know, a random one wraps itself to the woman off Ghosts and then tries to rebuild itself out of junk. The second one was, they were a police force and it all just was a bit mad. But this one was nice. It was just like, we are here to kill the Doctor. I'm on a mission to kill it. I'm an assassin, basically. And I like that there were only like two or three Daleks in it. Like, I think less is more when it comes to the Daleks. You know, one of my favorite stories is Power of the Daleks. And for the majority of that, there's only four of them in it. And Dalek's great as well. And there's only one in that. So I thought it was a really nice Dalek story. And I haven't seen a good Dalek story for a while. So yeah, it was great stuff.
I would want to ask though, what is it with the Chibnall era and trying to make creepy men endearing? No, we had All Ears Alan, who kept a dossier on the woman that he liked. And like that's meant to be funny and cute. And then you got Nick in this that's basically keeping a little museum to the women he's dated.
Oh, yeah, that was a bit odd.
Where they all go, they are still alive, aren't they? And then they went, yeah, and then you see Ashley and both of them, all of them just go, oh, thank God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a bit confused. I mean, I guess the idea was, and maybe they could have touched on it a bit more, that he was a hoarder. Like, yeah, he was a proper hoarder.
Or just a sobby romantic, in a sense, not just someone who, yeah. Just like, well, they might want them back.
It was the way like, they were all like, labelled.
Like something like Trigger from Only Fools and Horses would say, isn't it? Well, I don't know. Yeah, they might want them back. You haven't seen them in 20 years, Tree.
Had they been like in a pile, it would have been a bit less weird. Just like, oh, these are all women's things. Oh, yeah, they're from X. The fact they were all catalogued and on shelves, that was very, very creepy.
And, you know what would have been more endearing is if he was buying stuff to specifically put in there so he could talk to Aisling B.
Yeah.
Because like, we assume that was what the Monopoly was for.
Yeah.
Like if it had been like a thing of things maybe she'd mentioned in the past that she liked, and then it was like, oh, I like this food, I like this kind of music or something. It would have been a bit more endearing. Again, if it had been like 100 things, a bit weird. But if it had been just a few things, it would have been quite nice. Mm. It was just weird, wasn't it? Yeah, a bit uncomfortable, that. A bit odd.
And we got a weird cameo in this as well with Carl from The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Is that who that was at the end?
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it. I was like, I knew him, but I couldn't place where. And then I saw on social media that he's the crane operator that they save.
No, I couldn't.
Yeah, why was he in it?
Just what, random. Odd.
Maybe he's going to come back again.
Nothing going maybe. On during lockdown period, so...
Maybe he's the master.
Yeah, oh, everyone.
Maybe he's the Rani. Maybe he's Omega.
Not the Rani. Right. The curse of the new series is everyone's the bloody Rani.
Just got to praise Aisling B and say she was amazing. I like that they let her be like proper Irish as well, because Irish people do get really sarcastic. And she said, no, that's not creepy at all. And calling Mrs. Doyle from Father Ted.
Yeah, it was that. Mrs. Doyle. Yeah.
Straight away. I love the comment that cracked me up was when someone said, did she just phone in her performance? Which I was like, oh, very good.
Probably,
didn't she?
Probably did.
What she did, it was all on her phone.
I'd like to think that she's still Mrs. Doyle, and this is what Mrs. Doyle does when we don't see her in Father Ted.
Oh, go on. Go on, Father, go on.
I'm struggling of things to say because I haven't really got anything negative to say about this. I did think maybe it was about 10 minutes too long. You could have lost about 10 minutes. Maybe it would have been better if it was just one Dalek.
That end bit.
Maybe.
I don't know. The end bit where they're walking out with the bags seemed to be a pointless scene for me. I felt like it was a bit sort of, we already got the impression that those two were sort of not necessary to get. The next scene they're going babe and everything. I just kind of felt like that escalated quick.
Wouldn't it be great if they got in the taxi and then the driver was the master and there he is. He's the taxi driver or it's an Auton. But it never gets explained again. It's just
taxis or like taxis are TARDIS.
He gets the taxi and it's a Vervoid driving, but it never gets mentioned ever again in the history of the show.
Another bit I thought was absolutely brilliant effects was the how the TARDIS started to remodel as they were fleeing it.
I like that.
Did they redesign at the end?
No.
Was that a redesign? It was no different, was it? I was expecting a new console at the room.
A lot of people were, but I didn't think they'd do that with two episodes left to go until Russell T. Davis takes over. I guess there's an elephant in the room about this episode where we finally learn they are doing Phasmin.
I just don't want the Doctor to reciprocate it.
It doesn't look like they're going to. I'd say a lot of people were saying, oh, it's like Ten and Rose. I was thinking, it feels a bit Ten and Martha, to be honest.
To be honest,
she seems a little bit off with it.
That should always be how it was, though. I absolutely despise the fact that they've got that Rose at all had that story. The Doctor fell in love with on top of all the other totty he had in the past, you know. So I've always found that quite stupid. I've never liked that because I've always been of the mind that we've never had a companion fancy the Doctor before. There was no way Perry ever liked the Doctor in any sense. And I just don't, I can see why you'd write that one of them would fancy the other, but the doctor should never have reciprocated it or fallen for them. It just doesn't seem to his character, because it's not just, although it may be Tennant you're looking at, to me, I'm thinking of, well, you never did that with the previous, did you? You know, I can't imagine any of the previous doctors doing it. So why this one? But a lot of people with the Thasmin ones are quite set on the fact that they think that Jodie's got the feelings as well, which I don't get that. I think it is going to be, as you say, a one-way thing, which makes it all the more heartbreaking, really, which it just makes good drama. The doctor shouldn't return the... she doesn't... Well, given the fact that Graham went up to... It'd be really weird if Graham had that scene in the season 12 where he said, "Oh, Doc, I think I've got cancer." And she goes, "Oh, right, well, this is awkward. I'm going to walk away." And yet, for some reason, is absolutely fine with a relationship with the ads. You know, it's a, I kind of find that's a bit of a, it'd be a bit of a weird thing. But then, I don't mind that the Yaz fancy that's been hinted at since the very beginning in the spider one, which I've never rewatched because of my arachnophobia. But it has been building. I suppose they are paying off to it. Some people complain that you're just basically writing for the fans. Imagine if Moffat wrote that. You know, they would have kissed already by now.
What I want to know is, how am I meant to masturbate to Doctor Who with two attractive women kissing on screen?
It's very hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I waited 12 Doctors to find one that I found remotely attractive. So I had problems. So I couldn't do it with the first 12. It was just hard.
Yeah.
Bollocks. John Pertwee was very easy to masturbate to. Madam.
I don't mind them doing...
Come on, John Pertwee.
No, I don't mind them. I don't mind the companion having a crush on the doctor. That kind of feels realistic to me.
Yeah, and I think it depends.
Larger than life person that...
Yeah,
you may
and I think you can read into... I mean, as an adult now, I look back on the old series and I sort of go, well, I think Joe liked him. And I think, you know, there's a bit of she kind of likes him. Same with, you know, nothing with the first two, obviously. You know, Jamie's more of a son to him. And they're basically like, he's like their dad in a way to the companions because they're kind of young. Even though you get a bit of a thing between Jamie and, I think, Victoria. And then you've got like, with John Pertwee, I feel Liz finds him quite attractive. They're flirting. The first time they meet in Spear from Space, they are clearly flirting. And as I said, John Pertwee. What a man. I mean, I'm a straight guy, but come on, John Pertwee. And it's, you know, and then again with Joe, he's, you know, he's very, Sarah less so much, but then Sarah and Tom Baker sometimes have a bit of a...
No, I just go, vibe in that one. The only one that might have been, would be twisted, would be Colin Baker's Doctor and Perry.
See, I think though, I feel like Perry liked the fifth Doctor. I feel
you would have a huge shock and annoyance, wouldn't you, if you're like, oh, this is actually quite a really attractive young guy is taking me around time and space, and then suddenly just changes into someone who strangles you.
Yeah. Basically turns into Christopher Biggins. Yeah. An angry Christopher Biggins, basically. But yeah, and that's right. And then obviously you got Ace and the Doctor are like very clearly kind of, he's an uncle, almost like a father figure to her as well.
Actually, I like the fact you said John Pertwee and didn't even mention Paul McGann, for fuck's sake.
No, obviously there's the Paul McGann thing, yeah. But I mean, again, his best relationship, I think, was with Lucy, and that was a very kind of...
Paul McGann's probably the most attractive out of the classic ones.
And he's half young.
Oh, well, on his mother's side. Who now we know is Tectocaine or whatever it is. That's another thing we never get mentioned. That's what's been written out, is that we used to hear that he had a mum and a dad and a brother. Like they were all sort of in a very vaguely spoken about is he had a family. And now it's like, it's just Tech Tyoon, the old cow.
We'll see. I did think that the reveal kind of broke the momentum that was going with the show. Because at that point I was like, really? You've got 3 minutes to live and this is what you're talking about? And I kind of feel like it would have been a better scene when, you know, Dan and Yaz were traveling the world together, if Dan had pulled her aside and been like, you're in love with the Doctor, aren't you?
It's weird, isn't it? Because I think we could have benefited from a scene. And this is like a thing that a lot of Doctor Who fans don't like. But I think considering what we've had so far with the modern series, is that every single one of the modern series Doctors who are male have all been propositioned at some point. I mean, Eccleston in the very first episode is propositioned by Rose's mum, you know, and you've got like Tennant was all, everyone fancied Tennant. Everyone got off with Matt Smith. I mean, I'm pretty sure there are whole episodes of Matt Smith where he's literally just going around fingering everyone. Like it was just, I mean, Moffat had some real issues, man. Yeah. He was horny. He just used to write all these fucking innuendos and, The guy had issues.
Yeah,
and then obviously Capaldi a bit as well. You know, the Capaldi and the Master get off with each other. And I think we could have benefited maybe. And, you know, I'm not saying anything would have happened, but I think I would have liked to have seen at least one episode where a male somewhere that where they travel to has shows or at least flirts with the Doctor. She's had no male attention whatsoever. And I kind of feel that's a bit of an imbalance. You know, the male Doctors were getting female attention all the time. I think it would have been quite nice to see her get, because she's an attractive woman. Jodie Whittaker is, you know, so, so hot. And it's like, had she had somebody kind of try and flirt with her, and then I don't think she would have liked it, and you could have had her sort of react to it, you know, sort of back off sort of thing. You know, even some old bird went for William Hartnell in the Aztecs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even he had a little bit on the side. So I could have seen like at least one man at least trying to flirt with her. And it would have been nice to have seen her react to that. And if she reacted to it and would kind of like put it off, then you'd kind of, that would give us a little bit more ammo of how she might react to Yasmin.
Yeah, I suppose it's, the weird thing is we are stuck in that sort of point where it's too risky for them to do it, isn't it? To have a bloke hit on, especially in this climate now, you know, which I think is a shame because it does, as you say, it opens up, it evens up things as well. Because,
but it doesn't have to be anything creepy.
No. It doesn't have to be like a builder shout out. Oi, oi! Get your tits out for the lads. You know, sort of things like that. I suppose they just, because apparently you're not meant to nowadays, I suppose, is probably the thing. They're careful, which is why they've...
Well, I don't know, because I was going to say we have had male companion, well, male characters go for women. You know, you had Dan pursuing that, not Claire, the character in Liverpool, Diane, him pursuing Diane. You had obviously in this last episode, you had Nick, you know, trying to kind of impress Aisling B. So, you know, and he was doing that by having a weird collection of ex-girlfriend toys. You know, it was a very strange thing. So I couldn't see why. I was surprised it wasn't. I actually thought the Brett Goldstein character was going to have feelings for her or something, because they seem to be quite close in the small scene they had together in series 11. They had quite a nice chemistry, and I thought, oh, this is, I wonder if we'll have like the first male to have kind of a crush on this female doctor, and you know, and then when it didn't happen, I was like, he just died. But yeah, it hasn't happened at all, which for the new series alone, I find a little bit strange. But fine, you know, it's not the all and end all, but it would have been quite interesting to just see how a female doctor responds to some unwanted attention. Because a lot of the time, some of the doctors got some unwanted attention, and it was sometimes played for laughs, how the way they dealt with it, and it could have been done here. Now all I can imagine is just the 13th doctor reacting to cat calls from burglars. And I just can't imagine how I go, should I give it tits out for the lads? Is that what we do? Do we do that now?
Is that a cheering?
Yeah.
I think this episode might have worked better with no companions and just had Aisling B and Nick. But then again, I like the stuff with Dan where he's like, all right, mate, you knew.
That was brilliant, yeah.
The Daleks do not store stuff. he was livid, that Dalek. We do not store stuff.
Can I speak to your manager, please? Well, the bit about the Thasmid stuff, I was watching Dan sort of try and sort of manipulate a little bit. Just sort of say, you know, she likes you, you know, and things like that. And I was like, you know, I almost imagined he was going to grab both of their heads and just go on, kiss for Christ's sake.
I know that's probably what a lot of people on Twitter were doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It feels like, yeah. And do you know, actually, that bit was quite nice. That felt very Doctor Who, that. Very old Doctor Who. She likes you. Yeah, I like her too. And she's like, no, she really likes you. Yeah, I really like her too. It's like, no, you know what I mean. She really likes you. And actually, you could imagine someone saying to Tom Baker, you know, oh, Sarah Jane likes you. And you go, well, I like her. And now she really likes you. Well, I really like her as well. A wonderful girl. And you know, she really likes you. And he just after a while be like, oh, I don't know what you're on about. Like, he really just, you could just tell
that
was a very kind of old school Doctor reaction. If he did that scene with David Tennant, then he'd go, you know, do you know Rose likes you? He'd do a, he'd cry. I can't, I just can't. You don't understand. She'll age and she'll wither and she will die in my arms and I will have to live all her feelings and feelings and feelings and cry, cry, cry. And that would be all that was. And, you know, and if you said to Matt Smith, you know, Amy likes you, oh, excellent. Let's go for texting, scones and fingering. And he'd, you know, and then it'd be, I don't know, they'd shag Catherine of Aragon or something and be caught under a... As I said, he had issues, that boy. He just literally used to get halfway through a really good story. Moffat, but they go out and the Sabermen chase them down the road and, oh no, I'm getting horny! And then we cut to 1172 and the Doctor's naked because he's been... It's like, oh, dear, we go again. So what I'm trying to say is it was quite nice to see it underplayed for the first time in the history of the new show, having these feelings kind of very, very underplayed without any kind of silliness or overdramatic monologues about love and dying and leaving people alone or any silly innuendos. I mean, he put a long tongue in a Silurian, for God's sake. What is wrong with the man?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, imagine if halfway through, there's no point, is there, in, what is it, Doctor Who and the Silurians, at no point when Pope is going, if you don't tell the humans what they want, they'll hurt you. And they just goes, ooh, ooh, and little tongue comes out. Yeah, that's it. That's what we want. Big old sexy tongues. Like, it just wouldn't...
I think that makes it moves on from to a brilliant point thing that... I don't know what I feel about it, but you mentioned about the Silurians there. We've got at the very end in the next time trailer, the Sea Devil returns, which I think is... I can't work out if I like it or not. They've obviously kept it faithful, but I'll have to see the full episode to know, did that work? Does it work? He hasn't failed with the classic monsters, Chibnall.
No, but as long he's done very well with them.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, he made the Silurian sexy, for fuck's sake.
No, that's got to be Moffat must have put that in. I think Chibnall just wanted to do a lovely story about... He wanted to do a lovely story about Silurians. He goes, what if we make them sexy? Oh, can we not, Moffat? Let's just leave it this week. No. Come on, let's give them long tongues. And it'd be like, if he was doing it now...
Neve will be in there, and it will, and she's gorgeous. You can't cover her up and make her look like the old ones. You've got to have them look nice now. if he was still here now... titties.
Well, that'd be it, wouldn't it? If he just said, right, I'm going to bring like the Sea Devils. Are you happy for me to bring like the Sea Devils? He goes, oh, yes, excellent. We love the Sea Devils, love them. What if I made one slight change? They have big, lovely jubblies. No, Moffat, can we just... No, they have big, lovely, billy, bolly, lovely jubblies. You know, big, brown things, and they get in your face, and they hypnotise you. It's like, oh, no, Moffat, can we just not today, please? Just please, Moffat, not today.
I'm just hoping.
And then Amy gets off with them. Amy gets off with them.
When he's like, reading, doing, like, the read-through, do you think he ever once went, and then I kiss Amy? I mean the Doctor kisses Amy.
Yeah.
I just don't want to know the state of his trouser elastic during those read-throughs. I always thought he writes with a hard-on, and it's not necessarily always a hard-on for sexy bits, but it's also like bits your other little strange things in Doctor. So he's got the hard-on for nerdiness, where he'll just put a reference to the Crotons in there, then also hard-on because you'll have him flirt with all the Brady or something, you know? Well, who wouldn't want to have sex with River Song? Or a Silurian.
And that's what
or
we do.
A Silurian. Or an ice warrior.
You know, I was watching as a child, and I know we were all thinking, I'd love to shag a Yeti. So what we've done is we've made the Yeti giant. And they're very shaggable. They're not shaggable. We've modernized it. We brought it into the 21st century. They're all shaggable. It's like, he had issues, that boy. You look back on it recently, because I was genuinely watching like some Matt Smith Christmas ones. And honestly, every female he meets, Matt Smith, he kind of tries to flirt with them and try. It's just a bit creepy.
It's very weird. It's just disturbing. And someone pointed this out, actually. All of the strong women types that he writes seem to be around the same sort of look or feel. It's the same woman.
Yeah.
Moffat's got a kink.
He's got a type.
Moffat, if you're listening.
You saucy beggar.
We don't mean you any harm. We're just having a laugh here. However, I do hear that Brazzers are hiring at the moment. So if you want to make your dreams come true, you can go and write Dr. Screw.
The thing is, it's the same for all of his writing. He's like, even back to Jekyll, Sherlock. He's like, what if Sherlock Holmes was sexy?
Yeah. Isn't it? It literally is that.
What if Dracula was sexy?
What if Dracula was sexy and had an iPad?
What if Henry Jekyll was sexy? I wonder where else you'd move on to. What if the Moomins were sexy? Frankenstein was sexy.
I guess seeing as we're not really talking about the episode we're here to talk about, though.
We're kind of
exhausted everything that we have to say about it.
Well, I'm sure there's something else we can say about
it. I just thought it was good and fun and perfect.
It was really good. I think it was nice to have that.
Funny, the jokes landed. They were just nice. They did. Chibnall's written jokes in before with Bradley Walsh delivering them or whatever, and they've just not landed quite right. But this, just every bit was just, there were lots of moments to laugh at. It was really, really good fun.
Yeah.
I do wonder if some of this was ad-libbed.
Ashley must have ad-libbed quite a few bits.
I wonder, I don't know. Maybe. I like the ducking with the Daleks shooting each other.
Yeah.
I think that was really nice because it was done accidentally. He obviously just did it out of fear and it just happened to happen at the right second. But that really reminds me of kind of old school 60s Daleks, how they killed each other in Doctor Who and the Daleks movie. There was a lot of just kind of swinging them around to make them shoot each other. I kind of like that. And I like the way she came in and just went, "Did you duck?" And he's like, "Yeah." She's like, "Nice." Like, that's a good thing to do.
The Daleks clearly got trained by the stormtroopers how to shoot.
Well,
yeah, there was a few misses, but they did get their targets on many occasions.
Well, that's the thing about Gatling gun, isn't it? It's you can fire several rounds, but just because it's automatic doesn't mean they're always accurate. In this case, if they did kill them successfully, the show would be it would end.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Oh, sorry, go on.
I always find it funny where, especially in older episodes of Doctor Who, they'll introduce the monster and they'll introduce their method of death, and it's brutal. Same with the villain in the James Bond film. They'll have this brutal, unique way of killing someone, and then they never do it again.
Yeah.
It always happens. So the fact that, all those times ago, the Doctors survived for nearly 60 years due to the inaccuracy of some of their guns, which I think is just lucky, really.
What I was going to say as well is that I was sort of fearing with that sort of thing that there was going to be a weird trope or something bad to kind of end it, a poor ending. But actually, I thought the ending and the way they defeated them was really clever.
Yeah.
By mucking around with its sensors so it couldn't see anything. So it was kind of blind, which is classic. We love a Dalek going around, my vision is impaired. Brilliant. And then the whole idea of the face popping up on the phone and it being a mum and them thinking, oh, that's a human. Like my mind and my scanners recognize that as a human face.
Yeah.
And a human voice. So they fired at it, not knowing that it was explosives. I thought that was a really clever way to defeat them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and in my opinion, this did what all specials should do. I believe that all kind of like Christmas specials, New Year's Day specials, whatever, should almost act as a pilot to entice new viewers. Yeah. And this did that. I could see people seeing this for the first time and being like, oh, you know what? I'll come back for the next one.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so. Had a good cast in it. People know Aisling B. People know, as always, the sort of the big draw would have been John Bishop. So yeah, I think, it worked really well. It was nice.
All right, guys, I would say we've kind of exhausted this episode to death now. Sam, you just brought out a new podcast. Why don't you tell people about that and where they can listen?
Yes, I've just brought out a podcast with my friend John, fellow comedian. It's named after our show that we're bringing to the UK this year, Sister Act, CISTER, see what we did there. And it's a weekly podcast where we just talk about current affairs, basically. Just shoot from the hip, as they say. And it's just good fun. The first episode's out now. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from, basically. Just search Sister Act and we should come up. And the first episode went out on the 3rd of January, and it's going to be going out every Monday for the rest of the year.
Excellent. And Chris, you recently put on episode 3 of More Than Just an Impression with Sadie Miller. I really enjoyed this one. Why don't you tell people about your podcast and where they can find it?
We've finished our first, it's only 3 of them so far, but we will be doing another set in this new year. But it's, we've got a few other people we'd like to interview about essentially what makes it more than just an impression. It's just interviewing actors and so on, or I'm hoping to get a few directors and writers in to talk about how they basically keep a character going, because there are actors no longer with us that are being kept alive by, or the performance is being kept going by either their relatives or just random individuals. It's quite interesting to find out how they do that and what it means to them. So yeah, we'll be back with three more guests later this year, and then probably another three. I'll see how the year goes.
It's a really good podcast. Hopefully Bojo the Clown will put us into another lockdown and you can book more guests. Is there any more We Sound Familiar on the way, Chris?
At the moment, no. We were trying to get, so we just didn't have the time and to get anything done for the end of last year. But it's been such a long time. We're either considering revamping or trying to doing something different. We're not entirely sure. We might not even do the podcast again. We're not entirely sure yet. But we are going to try and do some more things in the future. We'd like to, I think the main thing is we just want to do things in person again, which we can't do yet. But that will be something that we'll look to do in the future.
Funny you should say that. I swapped phones about 6 months ago. And on my old phone, I never really got around to getting my pictures off it. You know, transporting them over, but I put them onto my PC. And one of the pictures are from the Wii are cult shows in that was actually, I couldn't believe, was in 2020, was in January, end of January 2020. There's a lovely picture of me on stage with you guys.
Oh,
very nice.
Nice.
I guess the problem with your podcasts, Chris, is that everyone involved is the busiest person in the world.
Yeah. I mean, John's a very busy working actor, Elle as well, Pete's busy being Pete, and I'm sure he's got the odd acting gig as well. And I've been doing audio books, which I've got to start a new one in a week's time after my son's birthday and Liz's birthday. I've got a busy January, to be honest. Christmas is nothing. Just January is the hardest one. On the 7th is William's first birthday.
Oh,
on the
wow.
9th is Liz's 30th birthday. And then on on the 19th is my birthday. So we get them out.
Of course
yeah,
it is.
So it's an expensive month already. But yeah, so it is, yeah, as you say, we just struggle to find the time to do it. And also we don't know whether the podcast is the right medium for it anymore, but we do want to do some sketches still, and we still keep in touch. We chat almost every day on a WhatsApp group, but when we do put our heads together and come up with something, we'll come up with something again.
Speaking of projects, is that the Forever Doctors or whatever it's called, Babel Colours thing ever coming out?
That is, well, Babel Colours, the timeless doctors. It's a slow progress because
that takes his time, doctors, they should call it.
Well, if you think about what he's doing on there, it's all assembled from loads of, it's actually archive footage.
It's
really bizarre. Yeah. It's insane the amount of work that they've done and the effects and so on. Because I'll get an email from him probably every 6 months just saying, thank you, I hope you're still up for being in it. And I'm sorry it's taken so long. And I'm like, no, take your time. I'm not going anywhere. I've not been cast as Troughton for Big Finish. I'm certainly not going anywhere. You know, they've cast Michael Troughton now.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. That's you know what, if you're going to lose out to anyone, at least you lose it out to his son.
Yeah, it's a shame really, because in a sense, but also, you know, it's his son. You know, you can't really, I can't really compete with that. Like, I couldn't really compete with Fraser Hines, to be honest. Even if people pointing out the voices, you know, who's better at doing the voice, you can't tell Fraser Hines to do one. And likewise, his son doing it just feels right. So I've got no hard feelings about that. The only, I'm just disappointed really that it just means I'm never going to do it officially. And that sadly is a sad truth, which I've had to come to terms with. Well, I came to terms with it a while ago. I sort of guessed that was the case anyway. I haven't been invited back since I did the comic strip adaptations. So I sort of don't feel that I've got a place with Big Finish. You know, that could be for many reasons. It could be because they just don't, either I didn't do very well in that one, or it could be a case of just there isn't a part for me. But well, it is what it is, essentially. But as I say, it's Michael Troughton, you know, and if you've read his the biography he wrote of his dad as well, it's a must read. It's a real eye opener, and no, it's in safe hands. That's the main thing.
Excellent.
That's the main thing.
And just some housekeeping when it comes to this podcast, you can now rate podcasts on Spotify. So if you do listen on Spotify, can you please go and give us a little rating? It really helps the show. It helps us get in the charts. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please give us a review on there. There hasn't been one for about 2 years. So I'd really like a fresh one. And on that note, good night.